Hey, everybody. It's the David Weekly. This is Sunday, March 6, 2011. And I'm joined here by the founders of Browserling, a brand new company. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yo.
Yeah. So here I have James and Peter.
Right.
So how did you guys meet?
So we are on this IRC network called Freenode.
Uh-huh.
And we are both really interested in programming. I'm on channels like C++ and Perl and Node.js. And James was on some of those channels as well.
Okay.
And so we met like 2 years ago on Perl channel.
Uh-huh.
So I was just, when I was publishing blog posts on my blog, catonmat.net, about Perl.
So your blog is catonmat.net?
Right.
.net.
Yes.
Okay. So this was like about the same time as maybe some of the funny cat pictures were circulating? Or
I don't really know how I came up
with this. How long have those pictures been circulating? I think an awful long time. Anyhow.
Yeah, right. So I was doing blog posts about Perl. And James noticed them, and he also did some art for them.
Yeah, just, you know, random projects and things. And I've had all these projects for such a long time. Well, Peter first got me sort of into blogging to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So like,
so you were a reader of his Cat on Mat blog?
Yeah, I'd read a few of his things.
Yeah, so I was blogging since 2007,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we met with James on IRC like in 2009.
Got it.
Or so 2008, maybe.
What kind of things were you writing in your Cat on Mat blog?
Also, I write about all kinds of computing, like Perl programming, C programming, and sometimes system administration, like Linux shell tricks and Perl one-liners.
Uh-huh.
And linear algebra stuff.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, linear algebra and yeah. MIT algorithms course.
Why did you start blogging?
Just to get popular on the internet.
Yeah. And then you're popular now.
Yes, so I am.
Success.
Yeah, success.
Hooray.
How did you make your blog popular?
Oh, so I would be submitting my stories anywhere that I can, like to Reddit, to Hacker News, to all kinds of Linux forums, and like doing, like posting the posts on Facebook and on Twitter and Plurk.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other social networks.
Mm-hmm.
So I would write a post and then spend the next 30 minutes like submitting it everywhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
Got it. And then how did you get introduced to computers?
So I was about 6 and
okay.
I went to my mom's job and she's a journalist and they
okay.
had the computers for the journalism to make to edit the newspapers, to put them together, to send for printing.
Yeah.
So sometimes the people who worked on the computers allowed me to do some stuff, like play games and play around.
How old were you?
6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so you started playing around on these computers
right.
meant for the
like,
journalists in downtime.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like Windows 3.0 at first and then Windows 3.1.
And at what point did you start programming?
It was about 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
So at first I actually didn't have a computer at home.
Right.
So I was programming on paper.
Oh, wow.
So I would program on paper and then go to these faculties and then rewrite them in like text editor and compile them and run them.
Wow. that's a lot of patience
yeah.
to do that.
Well, it didn't go for too long. Maybe I wrote like 15 programs. Then I would just... later I got my own computer and so I could do programming on my own at home.
Cool. Cool. What about you, James? When did you get started programming?
So about the same age, about 6 years old. I guess there's two big parts of what got me so interested in computing. I guess, first of all, my mom was pretty big into computing. Like early on, she had, like during high school, this TRX-80 from Radio Shack.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually see that used at all, ever. But we also had a 386 at home. This is like 1993 that we got that, and I thought, wow, this is really fun because there are all these, you know, silly DOS games like Battle Chess for one.
Oh yes, that was so awesome.
Yeah.
Pieces would slay each other. It
exactly.
Made,
yeah.
Made chess exhilarating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you try to you know get the queen, for instance, to kill the bishop or something, because it's something you don't really see very often. It's like, what was that again?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
That's awesome. So there was that. And then I was growing up in Portland, Oregon at the time. And there's this awesome museum called OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. And so it was like 1994, and like my family had one of those membership passes, so we'd go like once a month or something, and there'd be new exhibits and everything, like dinosaurs and awesome mechanical stuff. But then, like all the way upstairs on the third floor, there was this all of these computers, all of these different types of computers too, which I even haven't seen in modern times really much. But all of these different kinds of computers, like NEXT computers with like Unixes and like Solaris and old Macs and like Windows PCs, which was then like Windows 3.1.
Yeah.
And later they had Windows 95, big improvement. Mm-hmm. But all of these computers were connected to the internet. And so they all had, you know, different types of web browsers, like Mosaic and Netscape. And I thought it was just really amazing that you could just, you know, if you could find it, just go to like all of this crazy content, and you didn't have to thumb through. Well, I guess before then, I was really big into kind of encyclopedias, and just because I really love just browsing random, seemingly random, you know, facts and just sort of ingesting data. But then once I'd used the internet for the first time, I'm like, screw all this book crap. I want to.
The books are dead.
Exactly. You can't grep a book, I guess.
Right.
So
right.
That got me really interested in computing. Mm-hmm. And then later, my mom got the internet at home. This was like 1996 with AOL.
And where were you living then?
That was still in Portland.
Okay.
So went to Eastern Washington around fifth grade or so. Mm-hmm. But I guess we also had a, you know, some computer books, like this HTML3 book that I read like cover to cover, basically.
Nice.
And I got some time to just read that and to actually try to write some web pages and things. And there's this chapter somewhere towards the end in the middle, called, I think it was called LiveScript in that book.
Uh-huh.
But it's JavaScript,
yeah,
basically. And just this really tiny snippet, I thought, wow, that's really cool. You can just...
P.S. you can write code in your browser.
You can write some script, and it like pops up an alert box or something silly like that. And I thought that was really cool. And then, you know, after that, when I got my own computer, I learned some other languages. I was probably like, I think 11 when I started messing with HTML and mm-hmm. JavaScript. And then 12 when I started messing with like different other languages. Like I learned some QBasic, but I really didn't get very far with that because it was really, it felt pretty impenetrable. But
I actually learned the whole Visual Basic, Visual Basic 5 and Visual Basic 6.
Yeah, I messed with Visual Basic 4 a bit when I was younger too. But then I learned
the first time I was ever paid interesting money for a program was a Visual Basic program. So
yeah,
so I made $100, which later I worked out was like $2 an hour, but but it was a lot of money in high school.
Yeah,
right.
When did you guys graduate high school?
In 2004.
Uh-huh. And it was 2006.
Got it.
So, oh goodness, by the time I graduated high school, I'd written so much code and I knew so many languages. It was pretty ridiculous.
What was your first experience of a command line?
Like when I was six with DOS programs.
Right.
That was how you used a computer.
That's right.
So it's like,
it seems pretty natural.
It didn't faze me at all. That,
yeah.
That's how you get data into and out of a computer.
Yeah, same
you
for me.
You just have to type it in.
Yep. So do you see a generational difference between people who were first introduced to computers through a command line interface and those who, you know, for whom accessing the command line is a special program they need to invoke?
I really don't think so. I think it has more to do with basically how old you are. Because so, like over winter break, a few times I've started to teach all of my, so I've got two little brothers and a little sister in Alaska.
Cool.
And I've taught them some like Python programming and some JavaScript. And I don't know, they seem to get it right away.
Cause nice.
You sort of can just introduce this, hey, this is just like a calculator, except way more awesome than that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sort of incrementally build up these programs using just simple concepts. And I don't know, kids seem to get it. Or maybe it's just my own.
you might be related to some very smart people.
Yeah, I don't know.
But what would you guys recommend for somebody who's interested in getting involved in computer programming, is familiar with computers, but has never really tried programming themselves?
I would probably recommend just building a web page in HTML and throw in some JavaScript, like James mentioned before, that his first experience was just using alert to get the alert box in the browser. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get like to move elements around in the web page, just write the appropriate JavaScript.
In fact, it's much easier nowadays because you've got these nice libraries like jQuery that abstract over all of the horrors that live in the DOM. And it used to be so much worse. Oh, goodness, like layer tags and Netscape 4 and...
Now even with Node.js, you can do the server-side programming in JavaScript.
Yeah.
So it's sort of feeling like JavaScript's getting to be, you know, the first-class programming language of choice.
Well,
I think it's still... continues to be a really important language. I think that's only getting more so. But other languages are really fun too, like for beginners, like Python is pretty easy to just dive into, and then Perl is also really easy to get into. You just read the Perl intro page and you're ready to go.
Nice. So let's get back to the story of how you guys met. You guys started hanging out on the Pound Perl channel on Freenode.
Yeah.
And then at what point did you start working on something together and then start making something that was serious together?
So James had the first prototype last year in January. So it's January of 2010. So he wrote the first prototype of StackVM in Haskell. And he showed it to me, and We actually had discussed doing a startup together before, so he said, let's turn this StackVM into startup.
I had all of these crazy harebrained ideas for how I would build a startup. Like, I wanted to, like, build this hackable computer type thing, and what were some of my other projects? I wanted to build, like, sensor data. I guess I didn't have too many direct software ideas, actually, except for the StackVM thing. And so, over winter break, I just built out the simplest possible thing that could work. It was really just, it was written in Haskell, but it was really silly. It was just like AJAX calls, and then you would get an image back. It was just a really basic VNC decoder. So
nice.
Right. So he showed me the project, kind of liked it. Yeah. So I jumped in, but the Haskell was a problem because it was doing the image encoding really slowly. So I converted that to Node.js. So I wrote a Node PNG module for doing fast PNG encodings. And then James got into Node.js as well. Around March, April.
Got it.
Yeah, so I was still in school at the time. And
where were you going to school?
So I was at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Got it.
Actually, also in January, I started... working on this underwater ROV contest project. So I did this in 2008. It was loads of fun. That was down in San Diego. But in 2010, it was going to be in Hawaii in June, July.
Awesome.
In Hilo. Oh, goodness, yes. So so we had a lot of problems, I guess, when I did this contest in 2008, because like, we had an EE guy, but he made it his senior project or something, but then... So it was a little bit ambitious because of that, and then it didn't work, and then it's like, oh no, okay, so we don't have any electronics. I was just sort of tagging along to do some programming work, do a little bit of mechanical stuff, and you know, we had a good sized team, like, I don't know, five people or something, four then, but I had to kind of pick up the hat of doing circuit boards and electronics.
Exciting.
And I had about 2 weeks to get up to speed to build a working prototype for a driver system for this whole setup. And
high-speed electrical engineering education.
Yeah,
go!
Pretty much. Well, so it was just digital logic, so that helped. And then it also helped that the instructor, really awesome guy, Ryan Lawler, CS professor, has this crazy harebrained scheme to make circuit boards, just using household stuff, like you had out here with the spalloon experiment.
Yes.
Just hydrochloric acid, and you can just etch these copper-plated fiberglass boards in, an afternoon, in a couple hours.
Cool.
And so you can just have a prototype, really fast.
Cool. So take me back to how you were working with Peter to get StackVM out the door and make it into something real.
Okay, so yeah, I guess on Freenode, there's like the main channels that are pretty on topic. Then there's all of these fun like side channels where it's a lot of just random, kind of seemingly random banter, but it's also a really good place to sort of just throw out ideas and like, hey, here's a link to this GitHub project I'm working on. It's kind of neat, huh? And so I think it started with the collaboration with Peter started sort of that way, where it's like, hey, check out this neat GitHub project.
Mm-hmm.
I want to turn this into a startup or something, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, Peter just like around March or something, or April was it, just started really adding all of this awesome stuff with Node.js.
Right. So it was, so at first I wrote this Node PNG stuff and then Node JPEG and Node GIF. So you could do animated GIF recordings of the of the virtual machines.
Yeah.
And then I wrote Node Video for recording like CORO OGG videos, video streams from the virtual machines.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then I improved the design. But then James jumped in and wrote D-Node.
Yeah, so I had a lag after midterms. Well, I had a bit of free time. Well, I didn't really have a bit of free time. I was super busy that whole time. But I decided to make some time. And so I noticed that like our routing stuff was getting kind of complicated. So I wrote this crazy RPC system using some of the ideas that I'd gotten doing a student job using this thing that Ruby has called DRB. So I basically took some of those ideas that I thought were awesome, and ignored all of the things that were really annoying and I hated, and like implementing my own thread pool because the requests were synchronous. That's bad news. So I just made everything asynchronous, and yeah. And so we used that system, Dnode, in like all of our backend communication. But then also I wrote an adapter to make that work on top of Socket.io, which is this abstraction layer for WebSockets with fallbacks. So basically, we can use the same interfaces between our backend systems and with the client, and it just makes programming just so much more fun and just so much easier to get your head around.
Cool. So it sounds like you guys had started to develop this like really productive collaboration where you're kind of piggybacking on each other's work, and you get the sense of momentum that something was really being built.
Yeah.
And this was around summer last year or so.
Yeah,
or?
Summer and like a bit of autumn as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. And then what happened?
So then we decided to apply to Y Combinator with a StackVM idea.
Right.
So we sent the application. Yeah. And
we also decided that, hey, let's just go to the Bay Area just because, whether or not we get accepted, we're doing this thing.
And when was that you decided to move to the Bay Area?
So James moved in early October.
Okay.
And I moved in late October.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you just drove down from Alaska.
Yeah,
and
so
like, I'm going to live here now.
Yeah. So I had this clunky old car. I guess when I first left Fairbanks. So it had this little bit of oil leak, and it got even worse if you just spilled a little bit of oil on the radiator because it was just really hot. And so as I was driving out of Fairbanks, this is this really steep hill. It's the only hill pretty much the whole way, even though there's a mountain range in between. But going up this really steep hill, all of a sudden I look back in my rearview mirror and there's like this cloud following me. Turns out
the beginning of your trip from Alaska. You're pulling out of Fairbanks and there's a cloud of this plume behind you.
Yeah, coming out of my exhaust pipe.
Oh, that's no good.
So I looked at that. I slowed down. I stopped. I put my blinkers on. And I just kind of looked at it, and then I'm like, you know what? Screw it. The car's still going forward. Let's just see. And it did. It I guess it was just some oil that I'd spilled. So I like topped off the oil before I left, and I'd spilled a little, I guess.
Got it.
Made a huge.
Got it.
Yeah.
So driving down from Fairbanks, that's got to be quite a journey. How long did it take you?
Well, so I left Fairbanks and like stopped off at my parents' house in Kenai. So that like takes you a day, maybe like 12 hours or something.
Okay.
I mean, it's a pretty long time.
Right.
But so I stayed at my parents' house for about a month.
Okay.
did Node Knockout actually down there, which is this fun programming contest that Peter, myself, and one of my friends in Alaska, in Fairbanks, Josh, did. So
so all three of you were competing in this contest remotely.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like battle chess. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. It was a web-based real-time chess game. And the cool thing is you could watch everybody else's chess games from the main page, and you could like click on one to see it in like 3D style. Nice. So it was pretty much exactly like battle chess with the layout. You could like switch it between top view and then this sort of pseudo trapezoid projected view.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Cool.
Yeah. But then after that, I drove down. I think I left September 30th.
Okay.
And I just slept in my car the whole way. So the other thing about my car, besides it having plumes behind it sometimes.
Exciting.
Was that it didn't have a... It really needed shocks, but I really didn't have the money to get them replaced. So
it gave you a real feeling for what was going on with the road.
Yeah, goodness, yes. And so it wasn't actually that bad for Alaska roads. But as soon as you cross over, like right at the border between Alaska and the Yukon Territory, the roads are just insane. It's just really, really bumpy, and there's like potholes everywhere, and it's just gravel... Actually, the gravel parts are the good parts because the paved parts are not as good. And so I drove down, all the way. It took me about 4 days driving from Kenai, where my parents are, down to... I have some godparents in Everett, Washington. So I stayed there for a night.
Mm-hmm.
And then went down to my grandparents' house in Kelso, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed there for like, I might have been there for like, maybe like 4 or 5 days. But so my grandpa actually helped me get my car into a bit more operable condition because I thought it would be really awesome to just jet over to Vancouver in Canada. I was headed down the Alaska Highway, and it was like in Dawson Creek and whatever. And like, that seems reasonable.
Sure.
It's not reasonable at all.
Really?
The road between like Whistler and I forget the name of the town, it was like Lulouette or something, is just the windiest, most ridiculous road I've ever been on. So it's got like wooden bridges and... They're one lane, and so you have to like wait for other cars to pass. Not that there were many cars, because no sane motorist would take this road. And like the speed limits in some places were like 20 kilometers an hour, because the turns were just that severe. Going up, going down hills was just ridiculous. And by the time that I got to like Whistler, I noticed, I'd noticed this more as I was in the mountains, but hey, my transmission really doesn't work as good as it used to. It became all of a sudden, it was an automatic, really hard to shift this thing. And it made driving hard and unsafe.
But you made it safely.
But I did make it down. I like took Highway 101 after Washington, and it was really nice.
And I was following all these adventures on IRC.
So I'd like hop on at a coffee shop or whatever when I get network and be like, hey, I'm in Astoria or I'm in wherever, you know.
Nice. So you made it down to the Bay Area ultimately.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning of October?
Yeah, October's 3rd or some such.
Got it.
Actually, one thing I should add, my car, it was really hot. So the whole trip was really cold. There's actually some snow up in Canada for a bit. But as soon as I turned in, as soon as the highway turned inland, it got really hot. And my car didn't like that.
Uh-oh.
So by the time I got to Santa Rosa, I had to just, there was really heavy traffic for the first time also in the whole trip, except for Vancouver, I guess. But my whole car started smoking out of the blue. So I had to beeline it for an exit.
Oh my God.
Just had to wait for the thing to cool off because.
Are you still driving this car?
Yeah. No. It's okay. It got towed away, actually, because I couldn't move it. So,
got it. So you made it down here. You got a place in Berkeley, where you're living now.
Yeah, North Oakland.
Yeah, North Oakland.
Well, Pateras had a friend.
Yeah, so I had a friend called David, and I told him that James is moving down from Alaska. Do you know any place to stay? Because I knew he was... I didn't know he was in Oakland. I just knew he was somewhere in the Bay Area. So I told him, can you find a place for... Help me out and find a place for James. And so he contacted the landlady, and she had a room in the same apartment house where he lives. Yeah, and it turned out to be Oakland.
Yeah, so that's where I just sat down, because I really wasn't in a position to be moving around too much with that car and
right.
Yeah, just landing. Yeah. Here, so
cool. So then you've got a place now.
Yeah.
You're in the Bay Area, and you start coding full time, and Peter comes and joins you a few weeks later.
Yep.
Yeah. So the two of you are hacking out of this, what is it, one bedroom, two bedroom?
Yeah, just a one bedroom even.
It's, yeah.
You guys really gotta be. Was that the first time you had actually met in person?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, he sounded like a good guy from our IRC conversations.
And some Skype. So like we put together some of these videos.
Oh yeah,
for
right.
Stack
we also did some videos. Yeah, like a demo video for.
Goodness. Yeah, so putting together videos remotely is so hard.
Yeah, it took us like 16 hours to put the video together.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So you guys have been living together since the end of October in North Oakland, working full time on StackVM.
Yeah, so
and
I just
then also
found a couch,
line.
Really nice couch, and like Pateras has been
sleeping
on that.
Is it a comfortable couch?
No, it's not.
got an air mattress too, but yeah.
I don't like the air mattress.
They've been sleeping on an uncomfortable couch for like 5 months.
Yes.
Have you thought about getting a bed out here?
Now that we've got funding, it's definitely a possibility. So,
so you guys started. You had done some interesting work on StackVM. And at what point did the idea of browserling enter into the picture?
So it was October, mid October, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we submitted the application for Y Combinator,
mm-hmm.
and we mentioned that we are doing browserling, but we didn't really have a prototype or mm-hmm. anything working for the browserling.
Yeah, so I guess...
And you didn't get into Y Combinator.
No.
No. Well, we were sort of in the middle of a pivot. I mean, that's like the worst time to apply for
Did
anything.
They give you any feedback?
No.
Okay, so they're just like, no,
They don't give feedback.
Yeah.
Got it. So they're just like, no, sorry. And you guys were like, okay, well, we're going to do this thing anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess the idea for it, I'd had a kind of a vague idea about, you know, this something like this might be useful at some point. I didn't really know what it was going to look like, though. But I thought more that it was just something that you could do with StackVM. It wasn't really a product in itself in my mind. But then, so I went to this meetup in Berkeley, this Hackers and Founders meetup. And... pretty cool, just a bunch of random like business and hacker types just all in the same place and just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just showing some people and so we'd been posting to Hacker News and Reddit and so some people that I met there had actually heard of us before, which I thought was amazing.
So cool.
Yeah.
Oh, people know me.
Yeah.
It's gotta be a great moment.
Uh-huh. But so yeah, a lot of the people that So we got a lot of feedback when we did these Hacker News posts. And also just meeting people in person, it sounded like there was this really hard problem that made perfect sense that everybody has if they're a web developer. It's
yes.
that, hey, you really don't want to have to care about running all of these browsers yourself. You just want to be able to
I'm on a Mac and I need to test with IE6.
Exactly.
Help. Right.
Yeah. That should be somebody else's problem. I mean, it's
and you're the somebody else whose problem it is.
We're the somebody else. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Sweet. So then it became clear at that point that there was a real business to be had in browser testing.
Yeah. So I took like $10 or whatever. I didn't have much money left, but I just spent like 20 minutes coming up with names and like landed on Brazzling. And I was like, whatever. I just need a domain for this because then we're sort of.
Then you're launched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we actually launched that really fast. It was surprising how fast we launched that thing. Yeah. I think I started. I like get initted on the October 18th or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then we launched on November 24th.
Nice.
And did a Hacker's News post. And so like we had this queue thing also, which got to be insanely long, like 100 people or something.
So you had 100 people who were waiting to start using the product. You were just sitting in front of their browsers like twiddling their thumbs.
We actually had 5 servers queued up, 5 like desktops with the browsers loaded that you could use for that. But because of a bug in our routing software, I think we were only using one.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Cool. So,
which has been fixed.
Got it. So then, you know, use of your product is continuing to be to increase. And today, you actually closed your first round of funding.
Yeah, right. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Super cool. So what was that like for you guys to try and negotiate the waters of like getting other people's money for the first time?
So we have been going to these Hackers and Founders meetups, and we met Jonathan Nelson, who is organizing the event, and so he started introducing us around to other people, and with a note that we are looking for funding, and so we met Adam Rifkin at also at Hackers and Founders, and then Adam introduced us to you, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we met you.
Yeah,
and then,
of course there are all of these other leads.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. Yeah. So I guess it was a really big shift going from just hacking and doing nothing else pretty much to going out and meeting people, and I feel like it really like sucks your energy to have to have to wake up. Well, I guess this is more to have to wake up at a like a semi-regular schedule like normal people. I don't really do that. So it was especially harrowing.
So what kind of hours do you normally keep?
I don't even know. They drift, and I don't try to fight it, because when I try to fight it, I just feel sleepy all day. And
do you find your days are like 30 hours long then, or like
they're not that long? They're 26. They're over 24, maybe 26 ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
they drift a lot. It's not like there's any pattern to it.
So you just basically you go to sleep when you feel tired. You wake up when you're ready to wake up. You work when you work, and you just kind of just roll with it.
Yeah. Well, I think with programming, and especially the crazy kinds of programming that we've been doing, you really have to be in the right mindset for that, and you really have to have a good like motivational drive. And it's.
Could you explain to a non-programmer why the kind of programming that you're doing is so crazy?
Well, so. I guess with Brazzling, this is sort of a continuation of like some of the design choices that we'd been doing previously, but like to an even greater degree. But basically, how we structure our coding at Brazzling is we have our core code base, you know, and we like every chance that we can get to abstract out some big chunk of it to make the core nicer, we take that. And so, like, for instance, I've got, like, 90 projects on my GitHub right now, and...
Yeah, I have, like, 83.
Yeah.
So you divided up the project into lots of these little sub-projects.
And all of them are reusable.
Yeah, so other people can use these things. It's, like, Dnode, our RPC system, is on NPM, the Node Package Manager. And all of these little projects that other people can use, I think it's really great because, you know, not only are you contributing to the community, which is great, but of course we're running a business. What do we care about altruism? I guess the really bottom line kind of way to think about this is all of the complexity that you can take out of your project and host just completely outside of it is code that you don't have to think about anymore. And so you can just focus on the parts that are very unique and specific to your application.
Yeah.
And it just makes the motivational picture so much different.
So each time you create a new project, like a new submodule, it's like a new project, and you're very enthusiastic about it and just start coding it and from start to finish because it's not that large.
Yeah, the scope is really limited and manageable, mm-hmm. and like you get these sorts of iterative feedback right away when you're just taking a small piece of it out. And I guess it's so that's what people say a lot. They say, "Oh, modular programming, that's great. How is that any different?" But I mean, when you actually take that piece out of your code base altogether, like not even in a lib folder or something, it's different because especially if you throw it up on GitHub and especially if you throw it up on a package manager like NPM.
Yes, then you have good documentation for it and good tests.
Yeah. And there's like this latent implicit social pressure to make it good, to make it reusable, and to not increase the scope beyond what it should do. And I think that's really powerful too.
Interesting. So how do you decide what to publish out there on GitHub and what to kind of keep as proprietary?
So we did StackVM. StackVM was originally all open source.
Uh-huh.
But it's really hard for the users to install because there are all kinds of tricks you have to do.
100 packages for them.
Right. Yeah. First of all, packages and then like all kinds of symlinks between the library.
Yeah, and just the setup for this. And I don't even know that problem is going to go away. Because mm-hmm. it's just such an intrinsically hard problem to configure some virtual environment and to get everything that you need to get running well on the servers that you happen to have. It's just really, really hard. And that's something that I think led us to conclude that, hey, we should be doing this for our users.
Got it.
With something like BrowserLink.
Yeah, but then BrowserLink is closed source. So the core stuff, like all the queuing system and
All of our crazy backend message passing and token passing system. That's all
closed source. But then we are using all these open source modules that we wrote.
Yeah, and so we just spin them off when we think that they should be open because they're just this reusable piece. And I mean, it's good for us, for our bottom line, as I mentioned, with our motivation. And it's good for our visibility in the community too. I mean, this is a product for developers.
Yes.
So it'd be awesome if they've heard of us one way or another.
So what do you want to do with it? Where do you guys want to go with it? Like, imagine it's 5 years from now, not even like 6 months. Like, where's BrowserLink? Where are you guys?
Yeah.
So we'll definitely keep building BrowserLink for a few years and then just see what happens. Maybe we have a acquisition offer that we can't just resist.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we'll spin off some more projects based on top of StackVM because we have the StackVM technology. Mm-hmm. So we have had a lot of ideas how we can use StackVM.
Yeah, well, so I don't know about predicting too far out because, I mean, this problem seems like a really neglected yet important problem.
That's right.
And so as a result of that, there's so much stuff that people haven't done yet. Because nobody's even been thinking about it. So.
Got it. No, I mean, that totally makes sense. I'm curious about your personal aspirations.
Oh, personal aspirations. Well, I guess I'd like to get a bit more into robotics. I thought the stuff I did in Hawaii and down in San Diego was just amazingly fun, especially when I had to wear so many hats, you know, etching the boards and designing them in Inkscape, of all things, because... Mm-hmm. We were using a laser printer to iron on the designs.
Nice.
And doing that, doing like mechanical stuff, doing so I
just continuing to push yourself in lots of different
ways. Yeah, I really like pushing myself into stuff that I really don't know what I'm doing and then I just kind of figure it out.
Yeah, well, I'm actually not sure. I haven't figured it out. So the BrowserLink and then I'm not really sure. Whatever follows, whatever I feel like doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm really excited to see you guys working on an important problem that nobody else is doing a good job tackling. And just to see a pair of people from such different backgrounds and so passionate about technology and art and helping other people. So I'm really excited to have backed you guys. So
thanks
so much for letting me participate.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bye.